From the high desert, the great American Southwest in the darkness. How you doing, everybody? I am Art Bell. Coming up, Whitley Strieber. He's the author of many best-selling novels and works of nonfiction and four movies that have been made from his books. Most recently, the 2004 mega hit, The Day After Tomorrow, based on the novel Superstorm, written by Whitley and some radio host. Among his best-known novels are The Wolfen and The Hunger, which were both made into films, and, of course, the mega bestseller about his own close encounters, Communion. His most recent book, The Grays, is a thriller about what happens when aliens land. It is now being made into a film by Sony Pictures. Did you know that? In 1999, he co-produced with Mark Wolper a special for NBC based on his book Confirmation. At present, he and Mark are both producing a remake of Wolfen for A&E. His website, unknowncountry.com, is the most popular edge science website in the world. His weekly internet radio program, Dreamland, is among the most popular of all internet broadcasts. That's fact. Dreamland. So happy to see it continue. What a program. Coming up in just a moment, Whitley Strieber. Well, all right, as promised, here is Whitley Strieber. Hey, Whit.
Well, Art, welcome back. And welcome to Aaron, too. It's great that you guys are back in the United States. I have to tell you that. I'm very excited to come up and see you as soon as we can.
Thank you so very much, Whit. Well, I said when I left that I would spend anywhere between 8 months and a year there and
right.
Make a decision, and that's exactly what I did. And, of course, we did all the paperwork to properly immigrate Aaron. And so we were giving it a shot here, and we'll see how we like it. Now, the desert right now is screaming. We're getting 40, 45-mile-an-hour gusts of wind again. And it's just really wicked, Whitley. I'm telling you, it's wicked here. Listen, before we dive into the weather, I've got a fast blast from Daniel here in Ohio who said, is Whitley still visited by the Grays? When was his last encounter with them? Could you get him to speak just a little bit about the Grays tonight?
Well, sure. I don't think I've had a close encounter in quite a long time. You know, that when I left New York State in 1997, the experience sort of followed me, but then didn't. There was not much after that. There was a close encounter of some sort. I've never known whether exactly what it was happening in June of 1999, and I wrote a little book about it called The Key, but it was with a person who just had a really remarkable mind and a way of, they showed up at my hotel room in the middle of the night at 3 o'clock in the morning, and which was pretty impressive because nobody, you know, how did they know I was even there? I'd been confused and thought it was a room service waiter, and it turned out to be this guy that had some extraordinary things to say, which, as I say, I recorded in this book, and I'd never known who or what he was. I've never been able to find him since then. And that's really the last big thing that happened.
Whitley, I not very long ago, interviewed a remarkable man who had, we spent 5 hours. I extended the show to 5 hours. It was an abduction experience. Did you catch that program?
Yeah, I might have. Who was this?
I think his name was Jim Sparks. I think his name was Jim Sparks.
Jim Sparks, yes. I'm familiar with this case. And I think I've interviewed Jim myself. If not, Linda has on my show.
Okay, it's remarkable. He is a remarkable man with a remarkable memory.
Well, he has a better memory of it than anyone I've known. There is another man that Linda just recently interviewed for us. The interview will be appearing on Dreamland, I believe, next week or the week after, who is a lawyer and apparently a very prominent lawyer who interviewed anonymously, who also, like Jim Sparks, has got extensive memories of what happened to him. And most people really don't. My first experience with this thing was an abduction. Or the first one I remembered, let me put it that way, in late 1985. But then after that, for the next 11 years, I don't remember any abductions at all. It was a lot of, I went out in the woods and encountered them, and I used to have groups of people up at the cabin, and there would be group encounters, you know, where they would come and there'd be 10 or 12 people there. And that was the sort of thing that we did there. And they seemed to be connected somehow with that immediate area. In other words, when you left there, they didn't follow you. It was very odd. I was left wondering what they really were. I'll give you an example. A lady called Raven Dana, who's spoken about it publicly, who had an encounter in our house, said at first she had the feeling that it was like a little animal. And that was exactly the way I would feel when they were around me, because even though after a few seconds you would see this was no animal that we know in our world, it wasn't, when you're face-to-face with them and you're totally conscious, they're not. They just seem they're not very human at all, let me put it that way. There's not a lot about them. You would not think of them as being something that came out of a UFO, you're even possessed a spaceship. And yet, you know, what are they? And where did they come from? Why? How could anything look like that? And then suddenly it touches you or looks into your eyes, and it's like opening up the soul of God or something. It's appalling.
All right, well, it's very intriguing to me that they are territorial. In other words, one would imagine, and does imagine, they're interested in genetic research. They're following people, even families, from generation to generation. So
they do seem to be.
Yes, okay, then why in the world, if you move, would they not move with you?
Well, you know, I think in many cases, they do move with people, because one of the things we learned very quickly when we were in touch with a lot of abductees is that these were people on the move. They didn't stay in one place very long. When you were communicating with a group of 2,000 or 3,000 abductees, you'd have like 40% of them moving house every year. They would not stay in the same place, but this was because they would get relief from it, and they would move, and for a few months it would be fun, and it would start happening again, and they would move again.
But they didn't follow you.
They didn't follow me. Absolutely not. They did not follow me. They tried to follow me, but they did not, and it did not work. There were a couple of incidents when we moved down to Texas, pretty intense, but over time, it gradually faded.
All right. Well, Jim Sparks' line of thinking, Whit, is that the Greys are not from another planetary system somewhere, but probably from our own future. And my God, it made so much sense to me when you look at their line of investigation and what they're doing. You can, and you look at what we're doing right now, you can well imagine that in the future, the human race may slowly morph into something not so pleasant. Mr. Sparks made reference to the fact that 1 in 166 children now, and all of a sudden I'm seeing it on the news, incidentally, on CNN, and everybody else is talking about autism, how bad it is. It was 1 in 10,000, then it was 1 in 5,000, and a few years later it's 1 in 166. That's a big change.
Yeah, well, yeah, and it's there was a story on our website a couple of weeks ago about that, to the effect that apparently some scientists have discovered that it's essentially, there's a gene in certain people that makes them susceptible as children to heavy metal poisoning. And so these kids were being affected by the mercury that used to be a preservative in vaccines. And whether there are more people being born with that gene or there's more heavy metal pollution around, which is probably the case, I don't know. But, yeah, we could morph into something completely different over time, obviously. But, you know, I have a feeling, I've often thought when, there's always something about these experiences with them that is that takes it into a kind of another realm, and you're left. Well, like, for example, when we had people up to the house, and I would warn people, you know, don't touch them because it's a very big allergic reaction. And some people would touch them, and they would, you know, their faces would get all puffed up the next day. And I thought it was dangerous. I had epinephrine injectors all over the house so that in case somebody went into anaphylactic shock, which was initially a fear I had until I went to an allergist and really got control of the situation. But in any case, if you were from the future, one of the things you would be, the main thing you would be coming back to the past, presumably, to do would be to change your own present.
That's
so
right.
You would want to make, the physics of it would make you need to be as unlike what you really were as you possibly could. The more you were like something that never existed and never could exist, the more freedom of action you would have in the past, I think. And maybe what these things are constructions that are, they're biological, created biological entities that never existed in our reality at all and are being sent back from the future in an attempt to make changes because maybe it's an end game for them. Maybe they are in a situation where they have no choice but to try to change the past in order to survive.
Which means it's an end game for us.
Well, yeah, it is. I mean, we are at the beginning of the end game, and the way things are going, I mean, when we wrote Superstorm, hell, I thought we were 25 years away from where we are now.
Yes, I know. It is one of the more predictive books, I think, that has ever been written, and I get feedback on that daily. All right, well, let's move. Yeah, I'm sure. Let's move to the weather. It's very easy, Whit, when you're sitting here in the desert with cold winds screaming, for anybody, including myself, to say global warming. Who are you kidding? It's absolutely freezing here. Now, I get that again and again. People say it's not real. How do you respond to them?
Well, what you have to look at is the weather extremes. And they are absolutely awesome, what is going on. Because what we're looking at, you know, the media calls it global warming. What we are looking at is something that you and I in Superstorm called sudden climate change, and that's a much more accurate way of describing it. I'll give you an example. Today in Louisiana, two people were killed by tornadoes. They are worried about flooding in New Orleans again, not from a hurricane, but from massive thunderstorms. Now, here's the problem with that. It's January. It is not October. It is not April. This is not the season for that kind of weather in the United States, anywhere in the United States. The reason it's happening now in this country is that it's too warm down there. It's like autumn weather down there, and they have these northers blowing through and building up these huge thunderstorms at a time of the year when that shouldn't even be happening. But it is. And the kind of rains and flooding and the extraordinary storms that hit the Pacific Northwest this fall were completely off the wall. They were outside the record books.
I know. That's what keeps coming down here and whacking us. Now, with regard to New Orleans, that should be a spring occurrence, spring into fall. But spring into early summer is typically, and then, of course, the fall. And what it is simply a collision of warm air and cold air. And at this time of year, that should be occurring far south of New Orleans, not as far north as New Orleans. So that means
not at all.
Yeah, that means there's warm air where it ought not be at this time of year.
That's right. And we have, well, like, you look around the world at Australia. Right now in Australia, Western Australia, which is where Perth and so forth are, is enduring a spectacular storms from the remains of Typhoon Isabel that are just really hitting them hard. Meanwhile, Eastern Australia, Sydney and so forth, have got the worst drought they've maybe ever had. And those are the kinds of extremes that are just epidemic throughout the world. I mean, you saw when you were in Manila, you saw one of those typhoons.
Oh, my God.
I mean, that's a country that takes 20 typhoons a year. They're used to it. But these were beyond, they were outside of the envelope, which is why.
Woodley, I watched things happen. I watched typhoons that were tropical storms one day and super typhoons the next day. No joke.
That's not unusual. That sort of thing is happening all over the world. Well, I'll give you an example. There's an El Nino taking place in the Pacific right now. That is supposed to be something that will cause it to get a lot drier in the Pacific Northwest. They are saying that this is the weirdest El Nino they have ever seen.
In what sense?
It's generating the most powerful Pineapple Express almost that they've ever seen. Huh. And it shouldn't be. It should be doing the opposite.
Well, when you and I originally wrote the book, scientists were extremely divided, and there was a lot of laughing and a lot of chuckling going on at the kind of thing that we predicted. Now, in the years between the writing of the penning of that book and now we have a situation where nearly all of the scientists agree. There's almost unanimous opinion that that what we said is coming true. Not the superstorms yet, but the terrible global warming is now well underway, and I think there's almost no division on it anymore.
No, except for politics.
Oh, well.
There are people who have political agendas, and companies with, there's a lot of companies out there who are responding very positively to the problem. Walmart, for example, is going in a big way for low voltage electric lights, and that's important because that's a huge, huge company, and it can make a big difference. So they do care, but there are other companies who basically fear that the way they do business will be changed in ways that are negative to them if people believe this. And so you have this fake debate on global warming when there is really no debate. It's the scientific results have been in for years, and the fact of the matter is that it is happening. Partly it's a natural cycle that we can't control. Partly, though, it has to do with this medium-sized volcano that keeps erupting all the time, 24 hours a day around the whole planet. It's called the human race. And all this fire that we burn in dozens of different ways inside automobiles, inside our homes, this is all we fire. It's what we use. This is what we live by. We live by fire. We are a fire-using and controlling species.
All right, hold it right there, Woodley. We're at a break point. A medium-sized one, huh? Medium-sized volcano. That would be us from the high desert. I'm Art Bell with Whitley Strieber. Does feel good to hear that again from the Kingdom of Nye. Whitley Strieber is my guest, and we're discussing... Well, we're discussing the weather, and there really is something very, very, very much wrong with the weather. We'll get back to it if you'll just stay right where you are. All right. When I was in the Philippines, and as you know, I just got back It was one storm, one typhoon after another, after another, after another. And as I mentioned, one day they would be tropical storms out to the east of us by 100, 150 miles. Next day, they would be super typhoons just headed straight at us. It was really, really frightening. Whitley, at the same time, there had been predicted an awful year for the East Coast. But it didn't happen. It all happened out in the Pacific. How did they get it so wrong?
Well, because we have gone beyond the edge in terms of the climate. The climate is no longer really predictable. It is chaotic. And all we can say about it is that it's going to do the unexpected. We do know that if the present hurricane cycle holds true, that there will be years with severe hurricanes in the future. In fact, the head of the National Hurricane Center just resigned after 34 years, and he's always been a kind of a soft-spoken guy, and he basically said that the southeastern United States is taking its life in its hands right now. That there could be a much worse storm than Katrina sometime in the next 10 years. He didn't quite say superstorm, but he came as close as you can without actually saying that word.
that word is filled with a lot of, I don't know what the right word for it is, but a lot of meaning, a lot of...
It's got a lot of weight because when we started out, I mean, I remember going out on the radio, I mean, going out on TV and stuff and being scoffed at pretty much by people who I thought at the time were idiots, and I still do. And it was unpleasant for both of us. And what was astonishing, though, is to see the way the world weather systems began to set themselves up for just what we were afraid of.
I wonder how many people remember that interview that we did with Matt Lauer.
I don't know. I remember it certainly. It was, God, this guy, I mean,
yeah.
What an arrogant man, my word.
He was, though, and you remember, Whitley, I had an opportunity to go back on the program, and I got him.
Yeah, that's right. You sure did. Yeah, that was beautiful.
Anyway, it's karma. Everybody was laughing at it then. They're not laughing now. And as I said, they're kind of coming together on it. The question in everybody's mind, or most minds out there, is where do we go from here and how quickly?
Well, you know, the thing is that it's happening so much more quickly than we thought. Like, we have the situation where the ice sheets the Antarctic ice sheet is becoming unstable. The Greenland glaciers are melting in just astonishing amounts of fresh water pouring into the whole Northern Ocean from Greenland every spring and summer. The extent of the polar ice cap is going, it's moving back so quickly, that much more quickly than we had expected. They're worried about whether or not polar bears can even survive, and we're looking in the lifetime of a lot of people in a situation where the summers are going to have no ice at all on the North Pole. And what this does to this planet is, in a word, it changes everything. But there is building in both North America and in Europe, just what we feared, which is, like, right now, just yesterday, was the first time there has been snow in the Alps this year. If you can imagine, you're going to Switzerland to ski in November and December, and there's no snow. It's unheard of. Unheard of. And yet, they're having this heat, and what is dangerous about this is Europe's weather is controlled by the Gulf Stream, and the Gulf Stream is pumping warm air up across the eastern United States, Newfoundland, eastern Canada, and then over into England and into Europe. It is controlled, or was, that was by 12 great flows of water, warm water being drawn up from the south into the colder northern water. And this was what was pushing the Gulf Stream. The last time scientists looked at this, two of these great currents were still flowing. If they stop, then everything changes in a matter of...
Are you telling me that all but two, meaning how many of the currents actually stopped?
10.
10 of them stopped.
10 of them.
Only two continue.
Only two. And the Gulf Stream is much weaker than it used to be. It is weaker. And it's not going to stop suddenly. It's a massive, massive flow of water. But it will stop the way things are going now. And when it does, we are going to be in a situation where if these areas, like Europe, where it is so warm now, they are going to be experiencing an extreme example of what just happened yesterday or is happening today in Louisiana, of a very, very intense weather systems developing and complex weather systems developing of a kind we really haven't seen before, but we do know exist. They happen. I'll tell you a little bit about when they have happened in the past.
Okay.
The Byrd Polar Research Institute has been examining glaciers in Peru, and they found a glacier, and this is true of a lot of the Peruvian glaciers. When you drill down to the bedrock below the glacier, what you find there is so astonishing. You find plants, temperate zone plants, like might be in your own backyard, not yours in the desert, but most of us.
Yes.
And quick frozen, like they freeze plants, like they freeze vegetables to sell them as frozen food. That frozen that fast. And then those glaciers, those plants are frozen a matter of 5 minutes or less, so much so that their cells are still intact, the leaves are still green.
Well, that means they froze instantly, virtually instantly, and they never thawed out.
5,200 years after that day, they still have not thawed out. Now, we do not know what kind of a storm it is that comes up that causes things like that to happen. We know it exists because we can see its results.
It might have been a storm that initially did it, but it's a permanent or semi-permanent change that maintained
exactly.
It. Yeah.
That's the part we don't get. What could start with a storm where temperatures plummet over 5 minutes? And then 5,000 years later, a glacier is still sitting there. What did it? How did it work? We don't know. But we are tempting it again. Because if you look at that in Peru, then you move to Switzerland. And there is Utsi, the Iceman. Remember he was found when this glacier was melting a few years ago?
Yes.
And they found this Stone Age man with his completely perfect, his clothing and his everything was intact. He had been frozen and trapped in the glacier for all of those years, and then finally it thawed and they found the body. Now, he was moving through an alpine meadow, a meadow. When it began to snow, he was injured and moving slow. He'd been attacked by somebody, and he had some wounds, and he was overtaken by the snow. You know when that happened? About 5,200 years ago. The same time this thing was happening in Peru, approximately. So what was it that filled that alpine meadow with snow that didn't melt until 10 years ago? What did it back then? This is what the kind of thing we really do need to find out. We don't know what climate change means. We don't know how powerful nature actually is. But we do know that there are things about nature and climate on this planet that are so much more powerful than anything we have experienced in recorded history. We better find out.
Is there any way to find out?
Well, I think so. And I think that we're in a race. Are we going to figure this thing out and do what we can to control it in time or not? And part of it has to do with computer power. And it's not that people aren't trying. It's that we have lacked the computing power necessary to build climate models that really are predictive and that actually work, that would tell us answers to questions like this. But that's changing because the amount of computing power on this planet is growing exponentially every year. And we are getting to the point where there is enough concentration of memory to build these really complicated, really immense models with billions upon billions of data points, where you begin to do weather in these models that actually does come out like weather we're seeing around us. And that once we know that, we can start to understand this system a little bit more. But the problem is, as I said earlier, we're beyond the edge of the envelope right now. When you have weather events like we're experiencing on this planet right now, you're beyond the edge of the envelope. When you're talking about droughts that are unlike anything we've ever seen, an El Nino that works backwards, it's crazy. I mean,
Our own weather forecast here. I hesitate to even call it that. A friend and I were talking the other day and saying, it seems not so much like a weather forecast as it does a weather observation. As it happens, they call it, and that's fine. But the forecast, even out a day or two, just doesn't seem to be working. It's more like they're observing and reporting.
Well, that's right. The forecasting element in a lot of different parts of the world is getting, well, like in England, they have, just a few weeks ago, they had a tornado in inland London.
Yes, London. I recall.
Yeah.
Now, how weird is that?
Well, it certainly wasn't predicted on there by the Met, that's for sure. No one predicted a tornado in London.
Right.
So,
right.
The other thing is it happens with people are thinking, well, there's nothing we can do about this.
I'm one of those people, Whitley. That's where you and I start to differ. If we figure it out, if we got enough computer power and we determined what kind of change was going on right now, my bet would be that we can't do a damn thing about it.
Well, I don't know if that's true or not. I think that we're going to experience a lot of climate change. There's no question about that. Whether or not we can do things like reduce, it doesn't take much to significantly reduce our carbon output, our CO2 output. A couple of years ago, about 10 years ago, the Canadian Prime Minister issued something called the Canadian Prime Minister's Challenge, which was they made a list of everything that you could do to reduce your carbon emissions, and it was really amazing what you could do. And we have on Unknown Country, if you click on the quick watch and go down to the bottom of the page, that's on the left side of the left column of the page of the homepage, you will find a list of simple things you can do. Like one of them, which is one of the Walmart has gotten involved in, as I said earlier, switch two standard light bulbs to fluorescents. You save 1,000 pounds of carbon emissions a year by doing
And a lot of money.
And a lot of money. And think if 100 million households throughout the Western world and in places now in like in China where they're organized enough to be able to do a thing like that did it. That's an enormous, that alone.
Well, North America already, to be honest with you, Woodley, North America is not doing badly. We're doing a lot better, but we are only North America, and from a world perspective, we're a pretty little piece of the whole picture. Frankly, if you look at, for example, I just came from the Philippines. It's a mess. The air is a mess beyond what you can even imagine. Try going to Bangkok, where you can't breathe the air. China, where the industrialization is beyond all belief. A lot of Asia and a lot of Eastern Europe, absolutely a mess. So North America is not going, we might help, we're already helping, we're not doing badly, we're doing a lot better, but frankly, Whitley, in the rest of the world, it's a mess.
Well, you're right, Art, and it is a mess. And but at the same time, there are things that we can do, and I agree with you. I'll tell you, in the next hour, we're going to get into some astonishing information about the distant, the relatively distant past, about what can happen on this planet and what it can be like, and in a larger scale of sort of where we are now and where we're going, that is of absolutely amazing stuff that's recently been discovered. But we have to try to do what we can, obviously. And there is the other side of the coin, and that is that the United States remains the largest. We generate more CO2 than any other country in the world per capita, even than China. I mean, because they simply, you know, they're simply not rich as we are. They don't
right
do
as now,
much
but
as
they're
do.
They're catching up.
They're catching up very quickly. But there's also, there's two things happening. The country is also becoming better organized. I mean, there was a time, even 10 years ago, when you couldn't do anything to change things in China. But that's not true now. You can begin to reach people in China, and the Chinese government is beginning to show some concern about the levels of pollution in that country, because you're looking there at a country that could literally break down. I mean, its whole water infrastructure could fail already. There is literally no food grown in China that would be considered fit for human consumption in the United States because it's so full of pesticides and pollutants.
Yes.
Now you think about that. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing that it would be that way.
I'm giving Walmart points too, but remember, Walmart is one of the biggest consumers of Chinese manufactured items in the world.
This is true, and at the expense of maybe of American workers as well.
Yeah,
I know that, but there's a lot going on that's hopeful. But I'm not going to be a Pollyanna. I'm not going to, you know, when I agree with you, I think we're going to go through a lot of change. We're going to have this experience.
And we're going to have a little bit of a rest. We're at the top of the hour. We'll be right back. Whitley Strieber is my guest from the High Desert. I'm Art Bell.